As world leaders gather today to remember D-Day, there is not a soldier alive who was there who could ever forget. As part of the Allied invasion, boatloads of seasick U.S. troops landed on the beaches of Normandy under the withering fire of the Germans on the heavily fortified cliffs above. Norman Grossman of Newton, Massachusetts, was there.
I was very lucky to get across the beach. It was a couple of hundred yards. And I just ran across and I saw all the machine gun fire, the traces.
It was June 6, 1944, the invasion that Adolf Hitler knew was coming. Thousands of ships, thousands of aircraft, and of course, thousands of men. But its eventual success boiled down to small actions performed by many at a horrible cost. Historian John McManus offers a minute-by-minute account of D-Day in his terrific new book, The Dead and Those About to Die, D-Day, the Big Red One at Omaha Beach. And he's with us from St. Louis Public Radio. John, welcome here now.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And boy, the stories. I'm stuck on one about the radio man, John Joseph Pinder, whose face was blown apart. He holds it together with one hand while wading in the water to get a radio the size and weight of a window air conditioner with the other hand. Just amazing. And we want to hear more of these stories. But first, some background. The Big Red One, that's the nickname for the 1st Infantry Division?
That's correct. The 1st Division was heavily combat experienced by the time of D-Day. It had fought in North Africa. It had fought in Sicily. It knew a lot about amphibious invasions, and that's why the division is chosen to lead the way at Omaha Beach, which the planners knew was going to be a very tough nut to crack. So the division had this pride, but also a kind of a resentment that they always seemed to get the tough jobs.
Yeah, well, and this one of the toughest. Why was it necessary? Remind us.
Omaha Beach is extremely important because it's kind of the nexus of the Allied beachheads. You have the British and Canadian beachheads to the east, and then you have the main American beach to the west at Utah Beach. So Omaha had to be taken if the two were ever to join up and the Allies were to break out of Normandy.
Well, and if you've seen the beginning of the film Saving Private Ryan, you know how withering this was. That film is about as close as you can come to experiencing, we hear, what it was like there. But you've collected stories of men from the 1st Division about what they experienced. Just give us the overarching. I mean, you say there were cowards, there were heroes, but a lot of heroes you will never hear about.
Right. There's hundreds you'll never hear about because they were killed and no one saw what they did, or whoever saw what they did never talked about it and never made it into the records. I mean, who knows? So what I try to do is give you a new look at Omaha Beach because we tend to know a lot about what happens on the western side, the 29th Division, the Rangers, what's portrayed in Saving Private Ryan. And so I kind of see this as the rest of the story.
Yeah. And when I said cowards, that was a word that you used, but it's hard to, you know, everybody was heroic and brave just to be there. Just stunningly impossible. One 1st Division officer, Joe Dawson, said men were pinned down on the beach mentally, if not physically. There was this sense that they were frozen in fear because the fire was coming from everywhere. But then the title of your book becomes important, The Dead and Those About to Die. Why?
Yeah, this is the phrase that we most commonly associate with Omaha Beach in the long run. And it comes from Colonel George Taylor, who commanded the 16th Infantry Regiment, which was the lead unit for the 1st Division on D-Day morning. And Taylor had not come up with this spontaneously. He had actually written just that very phrase about 8 months before when he was talking about amphibious invasions. He was quite an expert on it. He had led them in the Mediterranean. And so when he comes ashore about 2 hours after H hour, this idea of only two kinds of people are going to be on this beach, the dead and those who are going to die, is foremost in his mind to the point of obsession. So he's walking up and down the beach under intense fire, making sure that people do something. What he was telling them is time is not on your side. If you stay here, you're probably going to die. He really does save a lot of lives that morning by just kind of motivating people and giving them a sense of just doing something.
Well, and let's talk about others who saved lives. I mentioned Joe Pinder, a former minor league pitcher, now a radio man. I'm just stunned by your description of what he did.
Joe Pinder is part of the headquarters group, the advance headquarters group that goes in about an hour after the initial wave of the invasion. And he understands very, very much that communications are going to be important for anything to happen at Omaha Beach. So he has this kind of commitment to his equipment. He was a combat experienced soldier. And what strikes me is that, you know, he was badly wounded as he's, you know, dragging in the equipment and the waves and still keeps doing it.
He holds his face together.
The Army recognized his valor by conferring the Medal of Honor on him. And, of course, you know, he did not survive D-Day, unfortunately.
There were three Medals of Honor. that day, Joe Pinder, posthumously. Private Carlton Barrett, what did he do?
He's with this very small advanced detachment that goes in with the 16th Infantry early on D-Day morning. And his job was really to kind of look around and figure out what should be good routes to get off the beach for his regiment when they came in. But instead, he ends up enmeshed in the crisis that morning because things were so bad. He ends up moving all around the beach, saving lives of wounded men, motivating people to keep moving, dragging wounded people in from the surf, which was very dangerous because the waterline was where the heaviest fire tended to be, and it's where a lot of the wounded were lying there as the waves started coming in. And so Barrett is just all over the place that morning. And what he does so impresses all the people who saw him, you know, that he ends up earning the Medal of Honor. And fortunately, he survived the war.
Jimmy Monteith?
Jimmy Monteith was a young lieutenant, and he has a really interesting story, too. He came from a fairly well-off family in Virginia that had a tradition of going to Virginia Tech. And he had gone there, and he hadn't done that well in college. He wasn't the most focused student. He was sort of the beloved baby, but they weren't in the family. They weren't sure what was going to become of him. Well, he kind of finds himself in the Army. And in the Battle of Sicily, he had already emerged as a very brave and well-regarded small unit leader. And on D-Day, he is one of the key figures in securing the whole eastern side of Omaha Beach. And the reason that was important is the German defenders on the eastern side of Omaha Beach were in a position to basically shoot everybody along the whole span of 4.5 miles that comprises Omaha Beach. Monteith's actions are able to kind of negate that. And he ends up getting killed, unfortunately, staving off a German counterattack in the course of the day. He was very highly regarded by the soldiers of his platoon.
He attacked the attackers. Things went wrong, as you point out. Landings were delayed. Some of the craft were far from where they were supposed to be. The men had too much equipment. The concern was that they'd need it later, but really they should have been a lighter force. But still, this incredible ultimate success, but at unbelievable cost. What are you thinking about on this day?
Well, I do think of the cost. You know, I went through and calculated what I thought were the total 1st Division casualties in the course of the day, and I tried to do it deliberately quite conservatively, and came up with a casualty number of about 1,300 or so, but that doesn't include all the different units that were attached to the division, and I think that's about 500 more people. And I really think the casualties were probably worse than that. You know, I visited the graves of nearly 100 1st Division soldiers who were buried at the amazing Normandy American Cemetery overlooking Omaha Beach today. And what I hope to do is to kind of bring these guys to life again as real people, that they were young, that they were scared, that they were just ordinary Americans in this circumstance. It's what interests me as an historian. Because as we get 7 decades beyond this, you know, it can be a little distance. So I think that it's incumbent upon historians to illustrate who these guys were and what this was really like so much as we possibly can.
To know names like Joe Pinder or Carlton Barrett.
Right, that they kind of can live again.
John McManus, his new book is The Dead and Those About to Die, D-Day, the big red one at Omaha Beach. John, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a real pleasure.
And you can read an excerpt at hereandnow.org. Here and Now is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is Here and Now.